Well, so I sat through it and
it's working.
Read the credits. Second to the last people who left, this man came up to me and said, "How'd you like it?" I said, "Mm-hmm." He said, "I thought it was perfect."
Wow.
So I have to see it again.
And the movie, the perfect movie that he felt was perfect, that we are discussing is the Savages. And present are
Honor,
Jane,
Rick,
Sandy,
Terry,
George,
Mira,
Nancy,
and Richard. And I think we all saw the film.
Yes. Wow. You should say that thing about the soundtrack.
Oh, should I say that off the top?
Yeah.
It was interesting that both of the movies that we've discussed and are discussing here tonight include Juno and this film, The Savages, include a particular song.
The Velvet Underground.
Performed by The Velvet, which is quite stunning. But very good. Because I'm blue.
This song did not stick with me.
In The Savages, you had to wait until the very end.
I don't remember.
Did we remember it during June? Well, I was thinking in The Savages that it was just perfect because this film is about a brother and sister, and I mean it's so characterized. What the relationship between a brother and sister is and how it's different from any other male-female relationship. Friendship, so, it's much less respectful than friendship, and it's much more intimate and less intimate than a lover relationship. I mean, like the way that they slept in the same motel room, and they fell asleep in his bed together, and there was no question that there was no touching. You know, it was like, I'm not attracted to you. And it really did capture that.
It was a great relationship. I mean, it captured that relationship, I think, wonderfully well.
Yeah.
And how I really... liked how she was portrayed as the emotional one, and that she couldn't keep it together to just get the business done, and he was the rational one, and that in the end, there was a transformation for both of those characters.
Well, but he was emotional. He was the one who was crying for scrambled eggs.
That's right.
That wasn't a transformation.
No, but with her, she had to see him accidentally crying. He would never admit that he was emotional in front of his sister.
Well,
he
didn't cry
with
scrambled eggs.
I think it had to do with his lover that was heading to bowling.
He was crying in front with the eggs. That was why he wouldn't marry her. I mean, she said.
Yeah, it sounds like he did it all the time.
Scrambled
eggs are important. I broke up with my last relationship over an omelet. I kid you not.
So you got that.
Watch out for eggs.
I don't have any.
Isn't that a wedding planning? One of those two will get me.
Yeah, watch the eggs.
Already started, okay.
And if I may jump right to the end, where the dog appears and he's got the little
roller thing helping him.
Did she save the dog?
That's what she says. I want to talk to you, but it's not about us.
That was like she had control. That was a situation she did have control over and could make happen and kind of control the outcome.
Right.
Save a life.
Yeah.
And go for life and be for life.
Hope. That's not hope.
Yeah, because before that, I mean, she was a screw up. You know, she was a temp. And she was in a relationship with a married man, and
I don't think being a temp is a screw up.
I think
it was
in the
her
context
day job. She was an unsuccessful writer.
But I think in the context of this movie, it's an indication that she's not ambitious and successful.
That's not true.
No, I take it differently.
She wanted to be a playwright. She was writing plays.
It's an accessible job.
But in the context of this film, the way that the film develops the character, we don't see her writing and being passionate about writing.
No.
We only see her lying about getting a Guggenheim.
Right.
And sending
off the proposals, right? We saw her send off the proposals during
her
work time, right?
And she also steals those stationery things.
I'm saying something specific about the style of the writing of the film the intention of the writer was for us to have doubt about whether she is truly ambitious. She lies, and so we don't know whether to take seriously, just as she doesn't know whether to take herself seriously. And finally, in the end, it's wonderful to see her take herself seriously, and even though she has doubts, and her brother loves what she stole from his life and what she did.
Really?
I don't agree with you, but that's fine.
But I agree with you in terms of what you were saying about the tenth thing. I do. I have to tell you, I'm an only child, so whatever happens between brothers and sisters is a mystery to me. I did not love this movie. I couldn't stand her. Mm-hmm. I thought she was a selfish, lying, phony. She probably knew that her brother had tried to get a Guggenheim. It was really hurtful of her to say that she got a Guggenheim with her first thing. I mean, I didn't like her. I mean, it was like, it was a struggle that I had throughout the whole movie. Because I had an antipathy towards her, mm-hmm. and I thought the whole thing with the dog at the end was like phony.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sorry to come on in that way, and I'm very willing to be convinced otherwise and persuaded, but I, right from the start when she was, there was just something about her character. Maybe
it's her hair.
But unfortunately, it affected how I perceived the whole movie, because I don't know.
In this film, I could not relate to the character in Juno, not having a teenage daughter. So I could relate to these kids dealing with the parent, and I could relate to being the parent, because I know, you know, one day, hey, I'm going to get to that age too. But
you hope.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was really good.
Wow, you enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah. I haven't enjoyed a film in a long time.
And you enjoyed it?
I thought it was a really good movie.
Wow.
And I love the relationship between the two brothers. Seymour Hoffman tends to get on my nerves a little bit, but I thought he was quite reserved here. I like his character. And I love the relationship. Well, I didn't love the relationship, but the way they portrayed Laura Linney and the married man, and when they were in bed at the hotel and having that exchange, how honest and real that conversation sounded. I thought that was a really good interaction. And the scene where she's with the patient care aide, the black guy.
Oh yeah,
that was really amazing. I thought.
Or she finds a big kiss on him?
In the beginning, they're interacting, and I thought, well, here's this really nice guy. You know, maybe it'd be nice if they got together. And then a little bit later on, she plants this kiss on him. I thought, whoa. I thought that was really good, because I kind of had hope that that would happen.
Terry, you were going to
say
something.
Something about the movie that really rang true to me is the how the two children responded to the father. And because of what I do during the day, I see this over and over again where the father's probably been he was inattentive, kind of off someplace else doing his thing, and really didn't have a lot of contact with these kids. But yet, when push came to shove, when it was time to that he needed their help. They did come through for him, often begrudgingly, often complaining. But that was validation, because people do that every day. Their mother was an alcoholic and crazy and beat them and did horrible things to them, but
they come through.
But they come through. Yeah. Father, who's a philandering nut, who was never really in their life, when he's in a, you know, they get a call from an acute hospital and he needs something, you know, mm-hmm. These kids come through and do this thing, and people, it's kind of the human spirit, part of it's the human spirit that's very real, that people generally do the right thing. And
how do you see this during the day?
The what?
You see this during the day?
Everybody knows what you do.
During, I own facilities for people with Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, really?
Communities.
In San Francisco?
No, I have one in Los Gatos and two in the East Bay.
Do you know Darlene Yee?
No.
I work in a gerontology office at San Francisco State.
So. Ah.
So, you know, what
is that? So... Yeah, but we deal with family all day long. You know, we have about 150 beds, and so you're dealing with people constantly.
And that's a minimum of two family members for each person in there, probably more.
If you're lucky, it's only two. In some families, there's nine. But it is, to me, that was kind of the one of the things that rang true, because their relationship with Pop wasn't great. Didn't have a lot of depth. Didn't you know,
except in animosity.
Yeah, but as far as meat to that relationship, they came through and they did what's right. And these are always things that I'm always amazed that. If this would have been my life, and I see it up close and personal, if this was my life, I don't know if I would, you know. Mm. Or actually spending money. You know, I see people dip into their mortgage, their house, and this kind of, for people that were shitty to them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's that.
What did you think about her line, Seymour Hoffman's line about Laura Linney was feeling guilty about her has been in the first home and taken her to the second home, and Seymour Hoffman went on to talking about how these places are for the family, so they won't be able to
feel guilty.
Absolutely. That was great.
Absolutely.
That was really well put.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and if you're in the business, you constantly do things, not so much for the resident, but for the family,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Who's the customer? Who's paying the money?
They're the ones that write the check.
They want the pretty picture.
Well, I'm glad you reminded us of that, Terry, because I was reminding me of the relationship with both parents, really. And the mother was just barely mentioned, I guess, that she was not a good person. And the father certainly wasn't good. And this explains very, very well how Laura Linney would end up in this adulterous relationship. Mm-hmm. And how she really, and I really think that she's, it was mentioned before, that many things about her, but I really felt like she was just her life was just a mess, mm-hmm. and I thought it was really hopeful at the end, and that once she left that guy, then anything was possible, mm-hmm. but as long as she was with him, that, you know, he wasn't going to leave his wife, you know, that she wasn't going to, that wasn't going to be satisfying for her. The only thing maybe satisfying for her was maybe the sex, and even that probably wasn't.
I love it. I love it. Is her bedtime disturbing? She's like, can you?
Yeah. Well, yes. And it made you realize right then and there, and this is what I love about Laura Linney, the actress, is she's so sexual, like, she's such a sexual, like, honest person in her roles, in most of her roles, many of her roles, that anytime you go see a Laura Linney film, I feel like I'm going to get some real honesty, you know?
Well, the sex was terrible.
Mm-hmm. And but she was lonely and she wanted it. And that scene that Lenore mentioned, I think that says a lot right there. It's like, well, can you disturb me? Because I'm really lonely. I really need you, you know. even though it's like the worst thing for her, or for probably for anybody, to be with a married person that is not going to leave their spouse.
She didn't want him to leave his spouse. She was in that relationship because it was because of the possibility of having some kind of relationship that wouldn't turn into
significant.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know about that. I know she hung up on him when she was in the bathtub once.
She didn't want to hear about his wife.
I know that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I understand what you're saying, and I think it's certainly at least partly true. But I don't know.
That's that. I saw that as the absolute structure of the film. She was in. I mean, her brother even said this to her, that this isn't going to go anywhere, and you're not going to be in this, and that, you know, she couldn't have a real relationship as long as she was in the relationship with this guy, mm-hmm. and it was a building thing. And she related to the dog far more mm-hmm. than she related
to him.
That's
true. Yeah.
During the sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you left the scene where Philip Seymour Hoffman is out the window. Yeah.
She introduces him.
He got one that has nothing to do with this
friggin'
guy.
He's like, okay.
Well, and the audacity of him to tell him how much his article influence.
They were all in the theater, right? They were in some manner or another.
That's right.
He's a
director.
The yeah, that's how she got her film, her play performed, right?
Because
really?
It had nothing to do with
no.
Well, he was thinking. They didn't describe it. My feeling was that they met in the theater world. That but he was a director or something. Yeah. She's a writer, and the brother's also a writer.
But how did she get her play at the end finally performed?
Because somebody saw the merits of it, and she
she wrote a good play.
Yeah.
I love the opening with the picture of the bushes and the women and their
I
like this movie already.
I heard a report on the radio when I was driving around Southern California a couple weeks ago about New Year's events. And even I thought, oh my God, this must be Palm Springs, that it was Arizona. But the idea was that also in Palm Springs there's some kind of a New Year's pageant with all these retired, you know, women, you know, retired people, among whom are a bunch of women who practice for months doing a stage show dance like the Rockettes precision dance in a group, you know.
Well, in Palm Springs, they do have a theater where all the performers are at least 70 years old or older. Quite a show.
I'm sure. Why not?
Yeah.
So the thing that didn't ring true to me, I mean, I liked it as a portrait of the family, the kids, the adult children trying to face up to being the competent generation and the failing parent and all that, because there's lots of that going on, we all know, and we're going to be there very soon in one of those roles.
Been there, done that.
Well, yes, you've already handled this
me
one.
Too.
I'm in the middle of it, thank you. So,
yeah.
But the thing that didn't ring true, of course, was how foreshortened the time was.
Yes.
You know, it was
convenient. They were very lucky.
Barely a season and a half or something, you know. And he's out the door, and we can resolve the whole thing. So
I thought that too. I thought that very much.
Well, they came back into his life when he was just about gone. They barely got there.
He could have lingered.
Maybe that's a script thing, but but in a manner of speaking, I mean, people come back into their parents' life the day that they're dying. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways.
Yeah.
Right.
It could happen.
Yeah.
I like the father. The actor.
Philip Bosco.
Yeah, it was unsentimental. I thought that was good.
I remember this one scene where the two siblings finally are really fighting, and they really blow up at each other in the car, I think it is, and Philip Bosco, the father, is going like,
take out the turkey.
That gave me a glimpse of maybe why he had withdrawn. That, you know, maybe he had to contend when they were young with these mean, squabbling youngsters who, you
you know, never liked each other. We're always at each other's throats. And I was like, oh my God, not again.
They love each other. I didn't get that impression.
No. What?
I didn't get that impression that they were that way.
You don't know what kind of children they were. I'm just saying that that went through my mind. It was this glimpse of him like, oh no.
See, I just thought of it as, he's just checking out.
He's checking out like he always did.
Probably always done.
Yeah, but I thought there was, I got a feeling of, you know, if I were in his position, I feel trapped in this car with these two people yelling at each other, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I thought any option.
But he would feel trapped.
I thought
like that, even if he didn't know who they were.
But do you think he was aware of the content of their conversation, or was just hearing loud voices?
Oh, I think he knew these were his kids, and they were screaming at each other.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he was following the content of the conversation, but here were these two children.
The relationship as them as younger people.
That something was being maybe replayed in a way. That's just an idea.
It's funny how we all come at these things from so many different experiences. I mean, Mira, you said that you're only child. I'm one of 12. So my experience, I have seven sisters. So you can imagine my relationship to a movie like this and the whole brother sister relationship is altogether different. And each of those seven relationships, and not to mention my brothers, not to mention my folks, is different and dysfunctional and good and bad and happy and sad and love, you know, love you, I hate you, you know. And funny to see this movie at this time, at the holiday season for me, because I had just gone and seen most of my family, and right around that time I was seeing the film, and I forget which came first, but I just tend to see him more in this time of year or whatever. And my father, who's not nearly in this bad of shape as Philip Bosco's character, but who's 89 and is starting to really is starting to kind of fade away a little bit, and hard, you know, a little bit hard to talk to, so to speak. And so you're right, you know, you've been through it or you're going through it. I lost my mom last year, so you know that experience of like watching her die, that makes these kinds of movies, I think, this whole, you know, my dad said to me the other day, something about the house or whatever, we remodeled part of our house that we all grew up in. He said, so well, unless you and Gia want to, why don't you get married and want to move in or something? And I started laughing because I was like, wait a minute, are you going to be there forever? You know, like, and he was like, oh, I'm going to just get a little place. And it's not going to happen, but he was just talking, you know. And it makes you think about the God, you know, it just really makes me... luckily, I'm the youngest of 12, so I don't have to take on all these responsibilities like these two people did, and my parents were good parents and were always there for us. So have that kind of dysfunction, but anyway, certainly the love hate relationship with the siblings was something to that hit home for me.
You just knew that they'd always been through these same things. You know, the same conflicts, the same, I know how you are, I know how you are, here we go.
Pushing one another's buttons.
Yeah.
You know, about the scene in the car. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting what you're saying, because I have not experienced those sibling relationships. To me, this movie was really dark.
Oh, yeah.
To me, the relationships were really dark. Like, they weren't natural. I mean, I don't know how siblings.
Well, let me tell you.
See, I'm on the other side. I believe that. You know,
very
I believe
realistic.
That.
Very
but the thing is, to me, it was more, it wasn't entertaining. It was dark for me to watch, the way that they related with each other.
Well, it was
the
dark.
Way they, yeah, but I think, it's, like, even in a way that, you know, to me, I don't know what the natural way that siblings relate to each other. Maybe siblings eat each other alive. I don't know, you know. So, and it's the other thing is, I thought the father was abusive. The impression I got, like, from the play and how the way he would go off was that he alienated his kids and produced kids like this. The mother was absent, and he was abusive. And as a result, he created two children that were dysfunctional on a lot of levels and not capable
but interested in theater.
Interested in theater. I don't know why, but yeah.
Well, why are they? Yeah, that was interesting that they kind of go into the same profession, so to speak, and they kind of.
Sticking with you.
What did the father done? Was that ever?
He was shown snapping his kid.
In the play.
No, what did he do for a living?
Oh.
I don't remember. Yeah, I thought the relationship between the two of them, Laura Linney and Philip Seymour Hoffman, was very healthy.
And normal.
Yeah.
I don't think it was
but healthy.
I don't know.
I'm saying, we're not talking about what normal brother and sister. Well, even in the context of the movie, it wasn't all bad.
Well, no, it was not.
They did like each other sometime, or love each other, and they cared about each other in their own, you know, weird ways.
Yeah, I thought it was a great relationship. I wish I had.
I know. I'm thinking about my siblings. And like, I'll take that. Yeah.
That's interesting. Because to me, it was two people just kind of clashing with each other. I mean, I'm simplifying it, but the clashing, I think, from my being out on the outside of that, probably meant something different. And also coming from being a person that had a severely abusive parent, my mother. So to me, when I see people like acting that way towards each other, it's sort of like, get me away from here. I don't find it.
But I didn't see the siblings as abusive to each other.
I think they were really annoying to each other.
Yeah, but you also have to. For me, I also have to consider the particular situation that they're in. They're in a really, really stressful situation.
Oh yeah.
Having to deal with their father, who probably was abusive, and now he's dying, and it's just been dumped in their lap. They didn't even know this was going to happen. It's just like that, man. But I love the first phone call, you know, when she calls him in the night at the very beginning of the movie, and he's this is not a crisis. No, it's not a crisis yet.
Right.
This is not, you know, and she goes, oh, well, like, we're in orange. He's like, yellow. I just love that.
The shit on the wall was just...
Oh, the shit on the wall.
That was just, I didn't like that at all. I was just like, I didn't have to see that. He just told us about it, you know.
No, the emotional impact is when you're seeing it.
I know, but
ever written a play?
Very visceral.
You're always playing show, don't tell.
I know, but there's certain things that I still want to see.
Well, but you don't want to, and that's what they had to do. They had to see things they would rather.
Exactly. I love that Laura Linney says to her father, "Oh, you don't need these suspenders."
Knew that was going to happen.
I was thinking to myself, so put a belt on it.
Supposedly that's a true incident. I think that might have been something Cody experienced. I don't know if it was somebody she knew.
No, this is Tamara Jenkins. This is a different film.
Well, I know that was quoted as being a true experience.
This is written and directed by Tamara Jenkins, who wrote Slums of Beverly Hills.
All right.
And about the same, which I like much better than this film, but Slums of Beverly Hills is about the relationship of the children. There were three children and the father who tried to keep them in the cheapest place in Beverly Hills so that they could go to good schools. And that dysfunction. And I was thinking about the siblings, you know, in Slums of Beverly Hills, the brother, she has a building thing where she sleeps with the guy in the building and when teenagers. But the brother ends up being very successful. He gets into a school because of his writing or because it's acting. It's another theater thing. Mm-hmm. And then she is, Tamara Jenkins is a writer, you know, is a screenwriter.
Suggesting this is biographical?
Well, it draws on her autobiography. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that you could draw this kind of psychological profile of this family unless you knew a family like that. And I remember when Slums of Beverly Hills came out, she went to the Sundance Lab with it, with mm-hmm. Slums of Beverly Hills, and read this she talked about that Robert Redford came around one day and said, and came up to her. Everybody was having lunch or something at these long tables, and he came up to her directly and he said, "I really like your screenplay, Slums of Beverly Hills." And she said, "Oh, wouldn't you know about it?" Because she just assumed that he was rich all of his life and privileged and handsome and got everything that he wanted. And he told her that he grew up poor in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who's starting that Slums in Beverly Hills?
Alan Arkin?
Right.
The Leone girl that's in all the trouble now.
Tia Leone?
Not Tia.
No, not...
Leone. She's been in the tabloids a lot. Actually, there was a...
Lindsay Lohan?
Really? No.
Leone...
I think I've seen this film back then.
It's a great film. It really is. And Marissa Tomei is in it.
Oh, yeah. It's a good film. Yeah.
Sounds really familiar.
So, Jane, what did you think of this film? You're kind of quiet.
This is true. I have. I liked it. And I thought, I've said a few things. Like, I think that the feeling that I got was that this brother and sister both love each other, care about each other, push each other's buttons, get furious at each other, don't like each other. And I agree with you that this is a particularly stressful thing that happens, you know, where they sort of haven't been very close for a while, and then all of a sudden this thing happens where they're smacked up together. Mm-hmm.
They do it together, though. That's what's interesting. They go back and help the father together. They don't say, "Well, you're going to go this week, and I'll go next week." And
it's no, much more than what you're in on this with him.
Yeah, we're in on this together.
Yeah,
we're in on this together. There's no. It's almost like they couldn't do it alone. Well, that's how I felt.
Where she was saying, "Well, why don't he was saying, why don't you stay here? Because your life is more portable."
Mm-hmm. Oh,
more
yeah.
Portable? What? Like a porta potty? She wasn't that keen on that idea to begin with,
right? Mm-hmm. She really resents that his life is more, so much more important than her. Than
well,
hers.
And there's that built-in whatever, you know, you have the sibling competition from way back, and then you've got they're both in the same field, and you know he's teaching, so he's got some status, and you know, yes. While she's opted to do the temping thing so she can write. And that's how I saw it. And so, that's some built-in tension there.
Right,
that's
and yet she defends him to the father. Is he a doctor? Isn't he a doctor? And
right.
She says he's a PhD, not that kind of doctor, he's a PhD, he's a professor, mm-hmm. and makes him sound good.
There's this interesting little scene of relevance to this in when he was in the classroom. I don't know if you remember this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he gets a phone call, but then the student raises her hand and says, "What's the difference between plot and narrative? Mm-hmm. Could you repeat that? Because you were written on the board, and now I don't remember." So it sort of showed that his life wasn't all that fabulous either.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I
don't think he liked being in that classroom. He didn't like that. He didn't want to have to be a professor. That's what I gathered. And that was really poignant, though, when he got the phone call and it just kind of goes silent. Well, and life goes on.
And
there's
a
difference between plot and theory or whatever.
And what, one,
narrative.
Of them, one,
about
of,
narratives.
One of them had applied for 8 and one of them had applied for 6 Guggenheims. One of them applied 8 times and one of them applied 6 times. So, you know, neither one of them had gotten it.
Well, female directors / writers. That was
our
theme here.
And the song.
And the song, hey.
Mm-hmm. And the song.
Well, bound the movies
the
together.
No, but the stripper wrote it.
So did anybody hear the critique of this film, which I heard was Philip Seymour Hoffman was supposed to be the older sibling, but in so many ways, Laura Linney acted like the older sibling.
Oh, I don't think
You don't think
true.
So?
Really? Mm-mm.
I was trying to look at it as I was seeing it, and
she's,
I couldn't.
I think she's older than him. The actress is older than him.
I think as an actor.
Oh, that's.
So maybe that's
what. He could act any age.
He's pretty 45. Amazing. He's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I saw him in the same week. I saw him in that film, and he's in three films now. Currently, I believe there are all. I haven't seen that one. I saw Charlie Wilson's War. And does he look different in that. Mm-hmm. Does he really,
He sort of plays off some of the elements from Capote and then some other stuff.
You need a Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He's just never the same. Whereas, I've been reading these critiques about Denzel Washington. And I think Denzel Washington is a really good actor. But he's getting criticized now for playing the same roles over and over. And that could be said to a certain extent that he's always the same boisterous kind of actor, whereas so few more, a bigger than life kind of character, whereas Philip Seymour Hoffman really truly does it all.
But he's a character,
and he's one of us. He's just much more right. Whereas
just a better actor than we are.
But also, he's in a character actor. He's given more of a range too. In a way, if he's a character actor, he's probably offered more variety of roles. I think Denzel Washington, just like what happened to Harrison Ford, and even remember Nicholas? It's like they get put in these typecast and these real rigid kind of roles. Well, I think it becomes harder for them to.
I think Denzel has been producing in his own roles for the last several years. Not completely, but there are a bunch of films that he's been.
There was one movie he made where he was a villain. It was still a kind of larger than life one. Training Day, right? Which I actually haven't seen. I've seen parts of it.
Fine performance.
But other than that, he's always the guy who
noble.
And solves the mystery and whatever.
And for Training Day, I heard him on Terry Gross recently on Fresh Air. And for Training Day, apparently, he said to the director, this guy, my character, has to be taken out even more retributively than, is written in the original screenplay because he is such a bad person. Mm-hmm. And so it's like Denzel Washington as the, what's the name of the code that used to be on, I can't remember. Hollywood used to enforce a code.
The Hayes Code.
Yeah. And so it's like Denzel Washington is his own version of this.
Hmm.
Partly because he's a religious guy and he doesn't want to see evil, be granted.
What film was he talking about?
Training Day.
Oh.
I mean, he was talking about several films, and about Training Day, he was the one, he mentioned that he was the one who had motivated a more...
An
ending for the guy, so that there would be no question that he was
There's
dead at the end.
There's a film he's in right now.
American Gangster.
Mm-hmm. And he's a gangster.
Based on a true story.
Really, I don't know what he gets in the end.
I would never tell you the ending.
Oh. Well, I would think he would, given our discussion.
It's also very controversial. American Gangster is controversial among African Americans because it's a horrible role model for kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to let it go for a while.
Another gangster who's supposed to be admirable.
I want to hear what people think real quick about Laura Linney's roles.
What has she been in recently besides this?
Was she in Housekeeping?
She was in
the Ramsey Report.
She was in
with Mark Ruffalo and about the brother that comes to town.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that was good.
You can count on me.
I love that movie.
That's where she was nominated, right?
And she's the older sister.
Yeah, she was great.
She's You Can Count on Me is the one Mark Ruffalo.
You Can Count on Me.
Okay. Yeah. And then of course she's in that with Sean Penn in that big Mystic River.
Oh yeah, that's right.
She plays the supportive wife of Sean Penn, and she makes love to him during the parade and all that.
Did she have a real bad accent?
And she got criticized. Yeah, she's been criticized for that. It was the only thing I didn't really, of course.
I think one of the best things she did was Tales of the City.
Yes,
Tales.
That's a
curse.
And she was also in Squid and Whale.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
We saw that.
Oh, so good.
Right.
That's so good.
And she's done some good things.
She's great. I really like her.
Yeah, she's good.
She's in a lot of things. Wow.
Very honest actress.
I did not like her in this one, in The Savages.
Mm. You didn't like her wig.
You mean I'm not the only one that didn't like her?
Her character?
I'm not talking about her character. You didn't like her acting? Yeah, I thought that she was forced. I mean, besides the wig got in the way the first time. But,
well, she may not have even chosen
that. Damn wig.
But I thought she played it in such a forced way.
Yeah, back very briefly to Philip Seymour Hoffman's versatility. It sounds like he also has a very good voice. He sang a little bit in this movie. I don't know if you remember
in
that.
This movie?
Yeah.
He
was singing in the car in German.
Yeah.
I think it was German. Well, it was
Kurt Bottle.
Yeah, it's whatever he was writing about.
Right.
Why was he?
It was the Three Penny Opera.
Yeah, I think that's
I know that. I know that whole thing in German.
Do you remember? He was in Bertolt Brecht.
I remember what he talked beforehand.
So he knew all of those.
She has a great line though. What is it? Because people are just dying for Bertolt Brecht. This holiday season.
That's right.
So busy.
Yeah. It's like he's devoting his whole life to this, and she like puts it down succinctly, like in one sentence.
Yeah, exactly. With all those darn books and magazines piled up.
She's like envious of him.
Yeah,
I thought her
more
character was
envious. And she was a mess, but definitely hopeful. That's why I really liked the film. There's a lot of hope at the end when her play gets produced in a.
Did that ring true to you though?
Well, the play did produce too. The dog thing I thought was a bit of a stretch because it was a little bit campy. It was almost like she says this line about the dog having. She says something about the dog being fit, or something, I forget what the line is, about the dog being, she's going to have to shoot the dog, he's going to have to kill the dog, right?
They're taking it in.
Tomorrow.
Because the hind legs, did he say that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the hind legs have wheels on them. It was a little bit too much of a stretch, I thought. But
in a way, the same thing with the, suddenly she has a play on Broadway or off Broadway. Being produced. You said that you found that kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, it was sort of like everybody's supposed to change and grow through the experience of, having been with each other and helping the father through this. And so suddenly she's like, play off Broadway. It just.
Well, we did talk about him going back to the woman in him going to
Poland.
Go see her in Poland while he was there on business.
That
we'll
rang
see
true.
What happens. It was much more like maybe it might work out.
Because that was him.
That was more
you
realistic.
You could see him acting that. And like that was an action that his character took to make that decision. But for her to get the play was like something that kind of happens. With a lot of external stuff, it wasn't like really somehow from her. It didn't, to me, it didn't feel real.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you had to read between the lines.
I love the name of her play though.
What was it?
Wake Me When It's Over. Proper Child. Wake Me
When. Yeah.
I don't know. It's not even original. There's a book called it.
All right. Did we do it?
Yeah.
I think so. Great.
You guys pick a date?
Mm-hmm. Date.